Who will I become if I let go? And who will I continue to be if I continue to hold on? Go easy on yourself. We're all carrying shame about things. And it's like, what are you not giving enough credit to your past self for? One of my favorite questions to ask is, what am I pretending that I don't already know?
This is Natalie Liu, the writer and creator of Baggage Reclaim. Natalie's books have sold over 150,000 copies. Her podcast has had 3 million downloads, and she's published a number of books across traditional publishing. She's self-published, and with this latest project, Let Go, she published with The Pound Project. It's an independent publisher. Her book is a two-part mini-memoir on family, friction, and the art of releasing what hurts. Hello and welcome to the London Writers Salon podcast. We're Parul and Matt, the hosts for this show. And our salon interviews are a chance for us to go behind the scenes of the creative journey and dig into the stories behind the stories. Each week we invite a writer to explore the craft of writing, the art of building a writing career, and the reality of navigating the creative world. And in this conversation with Natalie, we talk about what it means to write from the scar and not the wound, how we can craft a memoir without betraying ourselves, and how, ultimately, we can hold things lightly when life gets heavy. Plus, Natalie shares her experience of publishing with The Pound Project, and they tell us what it is that they're looking for in new projects. So if you're wrestling with a story that still stings, if you're writing a memoir, or this conversation will give you questions, comfort, and a path forward. So without further ado, we hope you enjoy this conversation with Natalie Liu. All right, Natalie, welcome to the London Writers Salon. And JJP's in the room too from The Pound Project. Brilliant. And we're so glad that you could join us too. Natalie, you're such a prolific writer. There are always so many projects you're working on. And your latest books, can you tell us a little bit about what they are?
Yeah. So Let Go is in two parts, family and friction. And it really was my opportunity to explore what I had wrestled with over the last decade. I had struggled really just around maybe trying to control the uncontrollable, even when I thought that's what I wasn't doing. And I think when I had started chatting to JP about doing a book with them, we talked about grief a good bit, just different things that we had sort of bumped up against. I briefly thought about writing a book about relationships again. And I was like, no, actually, I'd like to write about the thing that I found hardest. I'd like to write about this thing that I've wrestled with in various different forms. It feels like I've been on a road of trials. And I thought, actually, I could talk about this and share my experiences of it. And then other people may then find their own way into their relationship with letting go and what they're struggling with.
Mm. It's interesting to me that this has been on your mind for quite some time.
Mm.
And I imagine there might also be writers in the room sometimes who have a topic that they're thinking about and want to get out, but they're not sure it's the time. What was it about now that meant you felt ready to actually explore it?
I felt like I'd had a rather bumpy time. I mean, I've been now with a London Writers Salon. I feel like I'm closing in on 4 years, is it, I think? And I mean, you know, I love you guys. And when I was first in the group, I was writing The Joy of Saying No, which, as you said, was published by HarperCollins. And that experience took a lot out of me. And it took a while really to recover from sort of the publishing process. But I think in that period of reflection, when there was so many things that were changing in my life, I was like, I feel like this keeps nudging at me because you need to write about this subject in its, when I say in totality, of course, I'm not talking about every single thing that's happened in the last 10 years. But people know, for instance, that I broke up with my mother because I wrote about that on Substack. Or they know about me losing my father. Or they know about me struggling with tinnitus. But when it's put in this narrative thread, and I really talk about the wrestle that all of those things sort of combined has brought in me, I was like, yeah, actually, this could be good. And also because people often expect me to do, like, it's advice from Natalie and tools and practices and wisdom. And of course, I've shared elements of my story along the way. This is entirely different because when I say it's all about me, I mean, it's a mini memoir, but it's not so much about, let me guide you through these steps. Let me tell you these are all the lessons. It's like, no, I'm going to share this and then you figure out your piece in this.
And in terms of how you ended up, and we'll go into some of the details of what you write about, but in terms of how you decided to structure the memoir or even take the angle that you did, was that something that you sat and thought about independently, or did you work with JP at the Pound Project?
So I chat with JP about this a few days ago because we were recording an episode for my podcast, The Baggage Reclaim Sessions. We were like, when did we start talking? And we realized it was probably around about November time of last year. And I didn't have a clear idea of exactly how it was going to take shape. I had an idea of some of the key things that were the key events that were definitely going to be in it. And actually, I chatted with JP along the way. And it was more that once I then started writing it, that then we could both see sort of the shape that it was taking. And because it was coming in the two books, there was also this need to have a clear delineation between those two books. And so JP actually was great at pointing out, well, actually, it's clear that there's family in that first one. And then he was the one who was like, feels like friction is really the second one. So he was good at kind of being able to help me understand where to group things, to give it that shape. But yeah, a lot of it was me noodling. When I started talking to JP in autumn last year, I was actually getting ready to have a hysterectomy at the start of the year, which big surgery, they say, 3 months recovery. So my big plan was, let me noodle on all of these themes and see what comes up. For me, I write part of the book in my head first, and I'm writing things on scraps of paper. So that was the plan, and I still did that in the winter. But that's how it sort of took its form, really, was through that process.
I often think of writing is the process, the sort of creative process. And when you get to publishing, it's like turning into the business side of publishing. Mm. And so you've made that choice on the business side to partner with the Pound Project. What were your considerations or reasons for choosing them as a publisher?
Ooh, that's a big question. So I've self-published, as you know, my first four books. And then book number five, The Joy of Saying No, was traditionally published through HarperCollins. And, you and I have talked, I felt in my heart of hearts that, never say never, but I felt it was probably unlikely that I was going to be doing the traditional publishing thing all over again, or certainly not in that form, because it takes a lot out of you. It is so long as well. I was like, no. What made the Pound Project really interesting was obviously I'd already heard of them. Like my friend Emma Gannon had done her book, A Year of Nothing, last year, and I'd already been curious about them. But it's a co-self-publishing project, and that made very interesting to me because I've been very open about the fact that I feel that there's something really off about the traditional publishing model. I'm not saying, oh, nobody should traditionally publish, but if you were publishing a book, let's say, what are we in 2025, like 15, 20 years ago, like the publisher did most of the promoting, the marketing, the sales, they were, you as the author, you cracked on, you did what you needed to do, you delivered the book, and then it's like they would take over and it goes into a bookshop, all of that. Now, the contracts are very similar, probably the same even as back then, but a lot of it, most of it falls to the author unless you're the big name. And so then what happens is you're getting your royalties, your small percentage, obviously you get an advance, whichever, but actually most of the work falls to you. And that feels a bit off when you're also only going to get a small bit. You're not even sure if you're going to turn up in a bookstore. So with the Pound Project, I became curious because, as I said, co-self-publishing project. Also, I'd never done crowdfunding before. And I thought, this could be interesting. It was for a limited period. So it wasn't going to be like rumbling on and on. And I thought, okay, this could be fun. And also doing a mini book, which I quite liked the feel of. Another factor in it, I'm about people as well, relationships, energy, dynamics. When I was thinking about who I would work with, if I were going to be working with somebody again on a book, it is about also buying into that person and what they're doing. And fundamentally, I actually really got on with JP. We're both born in the Midlands. And even though I was brought up in Ireland, we're still kind of that Midland thing, but then he went to university in Ireland as well. So we just really vibed off each other. And I think that that really helped as well.
That makes sense. I think publishing is a lot about the personal relationship side of it.
Yeah.
Enjoying it. I'd love to dive into some of the content that you've been writing about. You touch upon some very personal elements. You're excavating memories, including some very painful ones. What did that initial drafts, what did they look like? Was it journaling? Were you voice memoing?
A lot of scribbling. I'm quite analog in a lot of respects. So it tends to start off with scraps of paper, you know, a bit of journaling, which, you know, part of me, what I do with London Writer Salon is I actually use it as an opportunity to have a good journaling session. So I, you know, there is the journaling, the scraps of paper, the odd voice note, dropping some things into notes on my phone. It's all a bit of a jumble initially, but it's just like, you know, that kind of pours out of you. And I think a lot of it I actually wrote by hand initially. That's another thing I kind of do as well. And then sort of reflecting back, looking at what were the themes in here, start building out lists and ideas. And that's how I started out with the book. A lot of scraps of paper and writing in the head as well.
When you hit memories that might be particularly triggering or just difficult to work through, maybe even inaccessible, how did you get over that? Or what did you turn to? What tools, practices, self-care routines did you turn to?
Because of my journaling habits, that in its way is, it helps me partly in terms of, oh, this is what I'm thinking about right now, or this, you know, this is what I'm struggling with or stumbling upon something. But it also helps sort of with the settling and processing. I felt like, of course, there's some really tricky things that I talk about in the book. And so part of that was sometimes just stepping away from that, giving myself space, going out for a walk, sometimes having a good old chat with myself about what was coming up, getting a sense of how am I feeling about this emotionally? Is this, as much as this is the thing that I've remembered about this, is it also relevant to the story I want to tell here? You know, what it is that I'm looking to impart? Because what can happen is, you know, sometimes we tell a story and we want to give every last little detail of it. Oh, I saw the bird going by outside and the car went this, and then I had this feeling, you know, I brushed my teeth and I had this thing for breakfast. But actually, how much of that really needs to be in that? And of course, you think about the, or for instance, you know, a very difficult, horrible conversation, a conflict. Yeah, sometimes you're like, yeah, now you just want to lay it all out. And then she said this, and then you want to go, and then you go, yeah. But is that actually material to the thing that you're doing? So part of it was like, yes, this is excavation. And then you write it. And there's like a processing, there's a bit of healing, a bit of confrontation that happens in that. And then you step back and you take the walk, you have a breather, you have a journal, you have that conversation with yourself. And then you go back and you look at it and it's like, is this still the same? Is this the way that I want to share it? Or do I want to approach this in a different way?
And if there's someone here who's, you know, maybe exploring a similar project, so writing about grief, letting go, painful memories, memoir, and they're worried that they're putting either too much or too little into that project, is there anything else that you might suggest?
There's an intention in what we're doing. So whenever I'm writing something, I try to be aware of what's my intention here. Not that I'm trying to control all the ways in which people might think about that thing, because the reality is we know the world that we live in, and you can write the most innocent thing and the person can turn that into a whole other thing in and of itself. But in being aware of my intention and what it is that I'm trying to do, and also that wanting to care for myself, it's like, okay, I'm writing this thing about this relationship. So let's say my father or whichever else. If I leave that out, am I leaving myself out of this? Am I leaving a fundamental truth out of this that actually needs to be in there to allow this to be what it is? And of course, look, we're all entitled to, you know, edit and tweet. But the fact of the matter is, you're going to tell the story, tell the story. If you're going to go to the trouble of telling stories and, for instance, writing a memoir, why are you going to leave out the crucial elements? And of course, there's ways to write things that, like, it doesn't have to be like blow by blow accounts, but you need the core in there because you want to touch people emotionally. You really, really want to connect with people. And you can tell sometimes when you read something where it's going, look, I'm not going to force you to tell me something, but it feels like there's a lot missing here or something doesn't quite make sense. And so I think when you realize that you're in that place where you feel like maybe I'm leaving too much off, maybe I haven't quite said enough, of course, you've got to connect with yourself there and be honest about, well, what's coming up for me here? Why is it that I am tentative? You know, I'm being sparing about what I'm sharing in this thing. And of course, that's around our own personal boundaries, but also because not all of the stories we tell just feature us alone. We think on some level, sometimes very consciously, about, oh, what if the person in this sees this? Or what if people think blah, blah, blah about me? So check in with yourself when you feel like you've left too little off, or maybe somebody else even points out, like it could be your editors, like, actually, I don't really feel like you really went there, you know, with that story. But then on the other side, you can sometimes find yourself being like, oh God, like this is actually a lot. And how much of this really needs to be there? And that's part of that is your own self-editing, but also part of that is the editorial process as well, where you've again, it's that sense of I needed to tell this story, and you pour it all out there and you feel like every single thing belongs to it. Like before, I'd be like, oh my God, like I don't want to cut anything out of this. And now I'm many years down the road, I've learned actually you have to be clever with how you're writing things, and you can't keep everything in there. So if you could say it in, I don't know, in a paragraph instead of an entire page, yeah, you probably could. You probably should do with cutting that down. It'll be better for the writing and better for the story and the reader experience as well.
And the author Tim Grawl, we interviewed him ages ago, and maybe you and I have had this discussion already, but I'm curious about your take on it right now, is this idea that you write from the scar and not the wound. So you write when you've had distance, and you've been alluding to that. I wonder for you, if you are clear, and this might help other writers here, when you are writing from the scar versus the wound.
Oh, yeah. Now, of course, we're talking. I started blogging 21 years ago, and my writing is personal. But I think it really came out of instinct, and then later on, through a very conscious awareness of it, like that need to be boundaried with yourself about when you're writing or why you're writing. It's that intention piece, the why behind what you're doing. When I first started writing, I was writing like a personal blog. From 2004 here. So, of course, when you're telling these stories, it's very easy when you realize, oh, I've got readers, like to go on them, like, right, you're annoyed or upset about blah, 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 blah. But actually, I realize I'd be doing myself a disservice and sometimes maybe violating myself if I were not giving myself even a little bit of space between something that had happened and my then putting it on the page. Because we all know, when you get that text or that email or whatever from somebody, and you're incensed that the first version of the thing that you want to write, when you want to fire back at them and say all of this stuff, generally speaking, that's not the one you send. Bit of time away from it, you have a different response from that immediate like annoyance and wanting maybe to lash back out with passive aggression. And the same thing can happen to us in writing, that maybe we just need that little bit more space. So I have tended to always be aware when I have that sense of how far away am I from this thing. Sometimes that is in terms of this thing happened on Monday. Am I now trying to write it up about it on Tuesday? When actually I could hold off. Some things you can get away with that. It all depends on the actual thing that you're navigating. So for me, I have largely agreed with what Tim has said, where I feel like sometimes if you're too in the raw, you've not even given yourself enough time to make sense of that thing. You emotionally bypass yourself, and it becomes, I am now crafting this thing into a work for everybody else. And but you've not actually really dealt with whatever that is. So I've always been very mindful of that. However, sometimes the experience is the experience and the time is the time. And so when JP and I started talking, and I said, okay, yeah, I'm going to do this book, and I'm going to think about it in the winter. 4 weeks after I had my surgery, I was diagnosed with cancer. They'd found it through the histology report, and I was thrown into the horror. It was just horrendous, the whole thing. And it doesn't matter. They say to you, oh, it's low grade. It's low grade. It's being caught early. You don't care when they say that to you, because your first thought is, oh my God, am I going to die? Like, it was just horrendous. And then you cycle through all of these things. And then, of course, as things started to not settle, but my brain was like, oh, okay, like it's been a week or it's been 2 weeks now. And it's like, oh, this isn't a bad dream. This thing is happening. And then I'm laughing to myself going, what the hell is going on here? Universe, good old Professor Life, as usual with his sense of humor. What are the odds that you agree to write a book about letting go? And then you get diagnosed with cancer several weeks into it. And all the things that you are planning to write about and that you've been wrestling with, and what you kind of came to understand about yourself and life, are now really being put to that test through you having to sit there and be like, well, when is the scan happening? And okay, well, how long is this going to take before I know whether it's spread? And well, why haven't I heard back from this person? And oh my God, like, what is going on? There was so much uncertainty, so much chaos in that time. The amount of times that even though I was in the horrors, I actually laughed to myself going, you just couldn't make this up, that this is happening with this book. Yeah, it was a lot. And it took a while before I could sit down and write about that because I was right in the midst of it. So the chapter where I talk about that would be certainly is one of the last parts of it that I wrote. It was too close. And even when I sat down and wrote it, no, it wasn't like, oh, I don't know what's happening and, you know, all of that. But I'm still in it and I could write about it. But it has been with boundaries around that and really having that sense of what you need, like without putting it crudely, like sometimes as writers, we just have to be careful of, you know, hoeing ourselves out, you know, for the sake of writing. And so there has to be that tenderness and gentleness with yourself. There has to be that sense of, yes, you are writing about this. And also, what is it that you need in order to put yourself in a good place that you will be able to write about this in the best way for the book, but also for yourself?
I'm hearing from you this balance of wanting to have distance, but also how do you have distance when you're in it? Mm-hmm. And so there's a balance to be had with self-care, being real, but also allowing yourself time to pull out and see the landscape a bit better. One of the things I found interesting about your books was that you have prompts at the end of chapters, which I thought was really interesting because you then flip it on for the reader, really, kind of taking the specificity of some of the experiences. And these are prompts that maybe you asked yourself, questions you asked mm-hmm. yourself, and then you flip it to the reader. I wonder if there are any such prompts you might share, if you have a favorite one for anyone who's in the middle of something right now, in the middle of an experience, any questions they might ask themselves.
Yeah, for sure. One of my favorite questions to ask is, what am I pretending that I don't already know? So I
love that one.
Honestly, with this whole letting go thing, you know, and look, we're all humans are wrestling with like letting go and holding on to some degree. But by God, we're very good at deceiving ourselves about what we know and we don't know. Like, what am I pretending to not already know? And you'll hear it. You'll see it as soon as you ask that. I think it's also about what is it that I'm really, really trying so hard to cling on to here? What will it mean if I continue holding on? And what will it mean if I let it go? And it's interesting what comes up for us with each of those things, because then we get to see what's on the other side and we start to notice some of our motivations.
This is so interesting to me because your articulation of these questions really sums up to me the way that you've approached writing about your life. My sort of guess, I mean, having read your work, you know, and interviewed several times, is you have this ability to, I want to say, extract in the nicest possible way to like figure out what's at the core of it. And that can be a really difficult thing to do. So if somebody wants to do that for their own work, for their memoir or for their personal essay, I want to say, how do you do it? But I know it's not a simple answer, but just any clues about how we might try and find universal themes, broader, bigger questions.
I think that this was part of what motivated me to write about this subject. I mean, I remember keeping diaries. I still have some of them, like from when I was in my teens. I've always been a writer, really, in some way, shape or form from really as long as I can remember. I've been journaling steadily, consistently for 11 years. And I remember noticing that I was like, why the frick am I still moaning on about this thing and circling around this story that I'm sure I wrote about like in 2014, 2015, 2016. And I've always said that, you know, when I blogged, when I first started blogging, as I said, it was a personal blog. And a year into it was when I really I experienced almost an epiphany about myself. One of the wonderful things about writing about yourself or to yourself, even if it's just like privately behind the scenes, is you start to notice patterns if you are really paying attention to what you're sharing about. And so this is an important part of, you know, writing, for instance, a memoir, because we've all had that experience where, for instance, we've read someone's memoir, or we've read their autobiography, and it's like, how have you managed to go all the way through this book? And it feels like you haven't, like, self-reflected and connected some of the pieces. Like, how is that possible to go all that way through it? Like, you see that sometimes when you're reading reviews of them, and it's like, how are you managing to be in, like, 10 of the same situation, and you still manage to go all the way to the end of the book, and you still haven't actually noticed that yourself and pointed it out to the reader? And so it is noticing, what are the questions that I'm always asking myself? What are the things that keep pissing me off when life doesn't go the way that I think it should go? When I'm disappointed, when no matter how hard I tried, you know, things don't go my way. What's the first thing that I tend to think? What are my gripes with the people, with life? Because that is the theme that will show up again and again. Like, in mine, it was like, and it's so funny because I'll be like, oh, people see you as like Natalie Baggage Reclaim, or like Natalie, you know, who wrote those books and she's helped out all these people. But of course, I'm only human myself. And so, but there's a part of you that goes, oh my God, like, why is this thing like coming back around again? So again, it's like, what's that thing that keeps coming back around, even though you felt like you passed the level and you, I know, like in, you know, in Super Mario Brothers, when you jump and you land on top of the flag and you come down, you feel, oh yeah, yeah, I passed that level already. Why am I back here again? That's what's needed for, you know, the memoir writing, the truth telling. Because I think when you do that, you're able to notice those themes and to have that compassionate sort of inquiry with the self, like, why might I be here? Why might I be feeling this way? What is it that I see as a fundamental truth? Or what is it that I see as being so pivotal to my identity that might be the reason I'm actually here again? Because it's a massive blind spot. And for me, it was that realization, oh, wow, like, you've done so much and you still try to control the uncontrollable. Yes, because you're human, but also because you need to go deeper some of the things that you have been working on. And that's like the last decade or so. Paying attention to those patterns and themes in our lives, being aware of it, not deceiving ourselves about it, is absolutely transformative for our writing, but also just for us as a person.
I don't know if anyone else here feels the same, but I feel slightly attacked and also slightly seen at the same time. Some very pertinent questions of responsibility. I love it, but I'm slightly uncomfortable, I'm not going to lie. Maybe one question more from me on the content, and then I'd like to bring JP in to talk a little bit. JP, if you're up for it, to talk a little bit about the Pound Project. So you've been exploring the theme of letting go in your memoir. I'm guessing there's no like final ribbon. Ta-da, done. I know how to listen. But any reflections for you, me, anyone who is in the process of trying to let go of something? Any thoughts, any questions we might ask ourselves as we have a grip is still on something that is causing us pain, perhaps, grief?
It is that noticing, you know, I remember bumping into a friend of mine. He was waiting for some news about something. And he said, you know what, I'm holding it lightly. And I was like, oof. And then I thought to myself, geez, Natalie, holding it lightly is not the thing that you do when you think, oh yeah, I might be getting this thing might be happening. It's like, it's more of a, there's this kind of tense clinging sort of, I noticed that over the 10 years, this brute force energy. It's always like, let me throw as much effort at it as possible. Let me also think about all the scenarios and have anxiety about it. And after exploring letting go, I again came to this very, very firm conclusion. You know what, Nat? You've been trained, you know, conditioned to throw your efforts after things. You learn to believe that your worthiness dictated your experiences. And I think it's fairly safe to say that that is categorically untrue. This idea that we're going to have a realization about something and then it's like, oh, I've learned everything now. Off I pop, you know, into the future I go. It'll come back round, because what happens is we learn things and then we apply them. And then if we think we can get away with something, we will. Also, life is throwing so much stuff at us that with the best of will, with all the good things in the world, you get knocked a bit. Life is throwing disappointments and griefs and joy as well. But sometimes it just feels like it's coming at you thick and fast, and you don't have enough time to power yourself back up and approach things in maybe the way that you normally would. And so go easy on yourself. We're all carrying shame about things where we go, I really wish I'd approached that differently. And it's like, what are you not giving enough credit to your past self for? Like, I've been very hard on, I don't know, 15-year-old me, all the small me's actually, but also there's 20-something me who made some pretty dodgy decisions, but also actually she made some pretty good ones too. 30-something me, 40-something me. What are you not giving your past self enough credit for? Like, in August last year, I woke up one morning and heard myself loud and clear say as if from outside of myself, I think I need to have a hysterectomy. Now, thank goodness I listened, because the alternative doesn't really bear thinking of. We don't know what lies up ahead. This was the big takeaway for me from writing this book and really looking back over this last 10 years. Because there's a part of my brain going, well, now, if you'd known that this was how you would have ended up, then maybe you wouldn't have taken that time off like 2 years ago. And actually, you would have been working and then like amassing like all this money. And then actually, you could take time off now to step back. Well, listen, first of all, the time is the time. The experience is the experience. And you made those decisions having no idea that those things were going to happen. But we do kind of carry on as if, oh, I did know it was going to happen and I screwed up because I basically went and did something else. No, actually, you need to thank your past self for where you are now. And you don't know how decisions you're making now or ones you've already made in the past are provision for what's up ahead. And the fact that I trusted myself last year, I thank my past self every day. I thank, what was I then, 47-year-old me for making that decision. But I also then realized, actually, 47-year-old me was only in that position to listen to myself in the first place in that way because of other things that I had done previously that then, even if I had made those mistakes, allowed me to be in the position that I was to make that decision last year. And so I have to thank my past self, because we do. We give them a hard time. Oh, well, if only you'd done this. It's a natural territory as writers. We do that. So give your past self credits. Give your past self kindness. Don't judge them so harshly, because actually you just don't know how much they've helped you out.
I definitely needed to hear that. And I can see from the chat that so did many others in this room. I'd love to bring in JP to ask a little bit about his wisdom in publishing you and bringing you in. JP, good to have you here, and congratulations on Natalie's book. I'd love to know a little bit about, because I suppose, you know, we have writers here who might be considering doing a similar project, memoir. What are you looking for in submissions overall at the Pound Project?
Well, first off, pleasure to be here, my second time, and what a great group. I'm in awe of you all writing and noodling away, as Natalie would put it. I was sort of thinking about this whilst Natalie was talking about how we got together and how that all happened. And I think Natalie really hit it on the head in terms of when she said about it being personal and there being a connection. That goes such a long way, certainly with a smaller publisher like myself, because essentially the first time I meet Natalie, or the first time she and I speak via email and then face to face, you could tell that she knew what I was about. And I hoped that I was presenting in such a way that I knew what she was about. I cannot explain how important that is. It's frustrating, because it's hard work doing a pitch that matters, that somebody's going to listen to. But every single one has to be different and really tailored for the person you're pitching to. Like, I had one yesterday with the greatest will in the world. She seems like a great writer, but she's asked me about 15 questions in an email. And it's like, that's work for me to have to answer all of that. And I know that sounds a little bit sort of trite, but a great piece of advice someone told me a long time ago, and this was actually to do with teaching, was bring them a solution, not a problem. So for me, it doesn't matter necessarily per se what point someone is at in their career as a writer. If you can give somebody something that seems packaged, and you've thought about the business proposal, and you've thought about what the audience is going to get out of it, and you've thought about where the money's going to come from. I think you, Peril, said yourself that the writing is the writing bit and the publishing is the money bit. The money bit has to be formed and has to be a business proposal. It's not just going to happen. And I think, as Natalie said, maybe it's a bad thing, maybe it's a good thing, I don't know. You kind of have to be a bit more business minded now, I think. Partly because maybe the bottom has dropped out a little bit on quote unquote mainstream media. But actually, I look at these things as a positive thing. I think there are lots of mechanisms now by which a writer can bring themselves to market without the need of the overarching hand, if you will, of the mainstream media and mainstream publishers. And the other thing to say is which I think Natalie hinted at, I cannot explain to you how many times we're on book 30 now. Natalie is number 30, which is amazing to think. I'm very proud that Natalie is number 30. I can't explain to you the amount of times writers say to me, I hated working with the mainstream bigger trad publishing houses because the idea and who they are becomes so tempered with and messed with, and too many cooks and too many editors and too many whatever. The book becomes less them and more the publisher. So I know that's a very roundabout way of giving you an answer to what you said. But for me, it's all about A, having seen someone do the work, B, having seen someone do the research, See, seeing someone knowing what the outcome is and how they're going to get to that outcome. And one other bit, which I was thinking about this whilst you're talking, if I may, is an actor friend of mine who I was recently talking to him about a pitch of my own for a TV thing. And he told me about this thing in the industry that they have, which it stuck with me. And excuse my language, it's give a shit. And he basically says, when you have an idea, why will someone give a shit about what you're saying, essentially? And I think that really applies to the memoir thing and the writing about yourself. You've got to be very careful it doesn't become an indulgent exercise. It's you do the work and why is someone going to care about it? And I think that's the thing to be thinking of.
So like the hook, what's the hook of the book
that
you send it out to the world?
Yeah, and I think a good way, I suppose, in the world we're in is what's the paradigm and what's the contextual point about what it is you're saying? There are so many things one can say at the moment, you know, like truth and yourself. And in Natalie's case, dealing with things, you know, like that's the give a shit about Natalie's book, right? It's how do you deal with these vast problems that you're having, which are universal? And then I think in a funny kind of beautiful way and serendipitous way, our books are really small. So it's kind of like these huge issues. And Natalie is the master of condensing difficult things into, as I'm sure you could tell when she was talking, into brilliant, you know, sort of existential, but also palatable and edible bits of information.
Yeah, that's really helpful to hear it from your perspective. Maybe just one last question, sure. And then maybe one more question to Natalie too. If someone wants to submit to the Pound Project, how might they do that? Is it simply getting in touch with you via the website?
Yeah, so it's editor@poundproject.co.uk.
Is it a suggested format as to what?
Yeah, I don't like to be over prescriptive because, like I say, for me, part of the proof of you being someone I want to work with is you proving that without being led down the road, if you see what I'm saying. But for me, it's kind of like, what is the idea? What's interesting about it? I.e. what's the give a shit about it? But also, what's the business case? And most agents and publishers will tell you that. So there's the idea. What is it? Why is anyone going to buy it? What is it that's interesting and original about it? So package up your idea. But then also, you don't have to be massive on Instagram. You don't have to be huge on Substack. You don't have to have every contact in the world. But you do have to be thinking about, like, why is that a business proposal? Why is that something someone is going to pay for? So for us, it's as simple as that. And also, look at other projects we've done. Is it the right length? Is it something that we would do? Essentially, do the research. And I know that sounds kind of obvious, maybe, and it's annoying as well, because I've been there tailoring it to what we do. So look at what we've done. Make the case in a short, pithy way, but also talk about the business case. We're always open to ideas. Yeah. And like I said, with Natalie, be personable, be you. And then you'll be able to tell if and when we meet, because, you know, it's a bit of magic. It's hard to explain, but yeah.
That makes sense. I feel like, yeah, chemistry is chemistry.
Exactly.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, JP. Really excited about Natalie's book. Really a fan of you making this so accessible to everyone, like an alternative path for publishing. Thanks for being here. All right. Natalie, final question from me as we wrap up. Any final thoughts, notes on this concept of letting go? I'll be more specific, maybe today or tomorrow as we're journaling. What other questions might we ask ourselves or reflect on as we head off into our weeks?
I think when we think about what we're holding on to, that's about identity. And so part of why we struggle around the letting go sometimes is because, like, who am I going to become as a result of letting this go? Because it's a shift in identity. It's like, if you hold on to something, there's something you get out of that. Be honest with yourself about what that is, because it might be, it's like, well, actually, I get to continue feeling a particular way. And maybe it means that certain people do or don't do certain things. But actually, if I let go of that thing, then it means that, for instance, I have to step into my future. I have to step into my potential. I have to recognize what I need to do differently, not because we're saying it's our fault about, for instance, what someone else has done, but the path to our healing, to our growth, to our peace is being honest with ourselves about where we need to shift. And realistically, we hold on because then we don't have to change.
Yeah, I love that. So what identity might I take on if I let go?
Yeah, who will I become?
Who will I
become if I let go? And who will I continue to be if I continue to hold on?
It's a beautiful place to end. Natalie, thank you so much for your insights, for all the thinking you've done behind the scenes over the years. Really shows. So Natalie's book, it's the Let Go series. Lovely. Well, thank you so much, Natalie. It's been such a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks for your wisdom. Really excited about your book.
I really appreciate everybody who has supported so far. I want to also just say, you know, Pearl, as always, thank you. Like, you are some of my favorite people. You have been so supportive of me, of my work, ever since I joined the group. I remember, I don't know if you remember this, but when I joined, I started coming to the sessions. I think Matt called on me. I think it was maybe the second or third day that I was in there. And I was like, what on earth is going on? But it's been the beginning of a beautiful relationship and journey. So yeah, thank you to everyone. The community is amazing.
Thank you. Yeah, and I think we all appreciate you. Definitely had writers. I still remember the first time they came in and maybe we called on them after a mingle and they said, do you know who I was in a room with? I was in a room with Natalie Loon.
Oh, wow. I love that.
That's great. Anyways, thank you so much. Thank you, everyone, for sticking back, for your questions, for the love and support. Let It Go is out.
Thank you for tuning in to the London Writers Salon podcast. If you enjoyed our chat and you'd like to join us for the next one, please visit londonwritersalon.com for more information on how to become a member. As a member, you will have access to our interview archive, to our workshops, and our cozy online writing community. Whatever kind of writer you are, it is an excellent place to make new creative connections and focus on your craft.
And if you struggle to find time to write, you're welcome to write with us at our daily Writer's Hour writing sessions. It runs Monday to Friday, 4 times a day, and all you need is the desire to write, something to write with, and something to cheers us with. We think it's the world's best virtual co-writing space for writers, creatives, or frankly, anyone who just needs to get some work done. Visit writershour.com to sign up and join us.